listening to our podcast and watching us on YouTube, which hopefully more of you are doing now. Tiffany and I give our all to this podcast with curating information, researching platforms, and creating a show with the best up-to-date information we can. We have a vested interest in the growth and health of your business and hope you feel the same way about us. We've joined Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month, and you'll gain access to our community, exclusive behind-the-scenes speaker access, publicity for your business, webinar discount opportunities, and more. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. So, in saying that, hello and welcome to the business behind small business. Whether you're selling or staying, we're here to remind you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. And today's episode,
it's all about that.
We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and
Tiffany Kao.
And we're going to get down into the nitty gritty to walk you through the more finite details of entrepreneurship, revealing the dots between startup and success. No one gets to a million without getting a little dirty. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it. All right, so entrepreneurship or business ownership is often glamorized as a pathway to financial independence, creative freedom, and personal fulfillment. However, owning a business is not always a one-size-fits-all, and certainly not the answer to getting rich quick, no matter what TikToker or Twitter tells you.
Any influencer. What?
They don't own those houses. They rent them with 15 other people. Let them show you that. And it's usually they get kicked out when somebody buys the place. Anyway, while many people thrive in the world of entrepreneurship, it is essential to note, to acknowledge that it may not be suitable for everyone. Today, we are going to explore why owning a business might not be right for you. But before we begin, please note our disclaimer. And I mean, today, if any day, note our disclaimer. Mm-hmm.
Listen carefully.
This is available in both our show notes and on our website. It should be referred to before and or after this podcast because we're going to hurt some feelings. We are going to hurt some feelings, and maybe we'll make you think. Especially if you're thinking about taking, you know, your little Etsy show on the road or, you know, whatever it is that you might have.
Our theme today is self-awareness or just awareness, actually. It's awareness because I think, well, I'll speak for myself and then you can chime in if you feel the same way, is I feel like I did as sufficient as it could be 10 years ago. Because 10 years ago, I mean, YouTube is not what it is today. Instagram was kind of getting started. I don't remember. Maybe starting. I don't know.
Yeah,
right.
But starting,
right? But the influencer was still very much of a new-ish kind of thing. And there was not a lot of information on these platforms like it is today. Like today, you can kind of Google and YouTube anything and learn how to do anything.
Oh, you might not remember, but Vine was the thing.
Oh, there that's true. Vine. That's right. That's right. So yeah, that's about when? 10 years ago, 10 some years ago. Yep. And so... So when I wanted to start my business, you know, I read books. Mm-hmm. I went online, found as much as I could, listened to read articles and everything like that. And oh my gosh, they did not prepare me for half the we had to go through. Like nobody actually told you, right? Because nobody talks about this stuff. It's depressing. Nobody wants to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But this is why we have the business behind small business, because it should be talked about.
Yep. Nobody ever talks about how much business actually goes on behind your small business. And so many people are like, I'll just go with photographer. I'm a photographer and this is great. And I'm going to start a business as a photographer. But then they're like, oh crap, there's like bookkeeping and invoicing.
Have to onboard clients?
What?
Wait, what?
I got to write this stuff down.
There's a contract?
Oh my gosh. Oh. I got to write down a contract now? Does an attorney have to look at it? What do you mean?
Should I incorporate?
Taxes?
What?
Ooh. And scene.
So that's what I'm saying. It's, you know what? I would have still done it. Like, knowing what I know now, if I knew all this, I, you know, probably would freak out more for sure. I'd be more anxious. But I would also say that I probably would have avoided a lot of pitfalls and a lot of wasted time if I just knew, at least aware of this.
Okay? Yeah.
Right. Just be aware. So I felt like I had a chance instead of like running into it, like running into a wall that I didn't know was there.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. So that's what we're hoping to do today. So it's not to discourage you from doing what you want to do. It's more of trying to make you aware of what you're getting yourself into. And if you're already in business, make sure you forward this to a friend who just told you about a great new idea that they want to turn into a business.
Or maybe you have a friend or a family member or a spouse, or it's you.
There's that.
That really don't know what the heck you're doing. And maybe you should be listening to this and taking notes.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. So I'm going to go over reasons of why you shouldn't go into business. Because there's more than a myriad of information out there telling you about why you should go into, right, hey, yay, so motivating, so motivating. But these are the reasons why you shouldn't get into it. First of all, so most people get into business for financial freedom and just independence and all that fun jazz. Yeah, that's BS, because talk about the loss of independence and autonomy when you're in a business.
Oh, yeah.
Because instead of reporting to one boss, you end up reporting to two. Usually they're called customers or clients. And then if you have employees, yeah, you answer to them too. You think you're the boss of them? No, not at all. So that whole independence thing, kind of a myth. Now you can get there eventually, right? But there's a lot of steps in between before you get there. But I guarantee you, no new business owner gets in business and then realize all of a sudden they have this independence and freedom of time.
Yes.
Right? You probably heard it. You probably heard it. People are like, oh my gosh, you're your own business. Like, you must have so much time. You must be able to do whatever you want, whenever you want. No, no.
That is the biggest misconception, I feel like. Oh, you know, you should be available to do such and such and such. No, actually, you're not, because you are the core of your company. So everything passes through you. So really, you're available all the time. You have to be.
Yeah. Yep. You're available all the time. So, yeah, independence and autonomy, not quite what you're going to find if you go into business, right? The other thing is, talk about uncertainty of your financial prospects. Yes. Because you know what? It takes a while to actually generate revenue. Actually, it takes a while to generate consistent and steady revenue. And it certainly takes a while to generate enough revenue to probably quit your full-time job or replace your full-time job. So, I mean, okay, so I did that thing. I quit my full-time job to start my business because, hey, you know, that sounded like a good idea at the time. No, it took me like a year to get back to where I was, right? So luckily I was responsible and I had savings and I was naive enough not to freak out about it. But honestly, if I knew what I know now, I would never recommend anybody to quit your full-time job and just jump right in from the start.
Nope.
No. Don't quit your day job yet until you have somewhat of a steady footing about like how the business works and maybe a few clients under your belt before you want to quit that full-time job and you know, pursue the business 100%.
Yeah, you got to make sure that it's even going to is sustainable, is going to do well.
Yeah.
Don't leave a sure thing unless your new thing is a sure thing.
That's true. And you know, and that's the thing. It's like I feel like you have two scenarios. Either you spend a lot of time, 100% of your time, because you quit your job and now you have nothing else to do, but you spend 100% of your time building your business, which, by the way, will drive you insane, because there are some things that, which is also what lead me to my third point, which is the lack of control. People perceive that you go into business and you're fully in control of your business. That's a myth too. So many things are outside of your control. Good luck trying to figure out what all those things are.
Yeah.
So even if, let's say, you quit your full-time job, you focus on your business 100%, there are things you can't do about moving that needle closer to the amount of money you want to make, right? It's 6 months, 3 to 6 months maybe till when you start making revenue. Like I said, 6 months to a year to maybe getting consistent and steady revenue, even anywhere close to what you might get for your full-time job.
It might take a couple of years before you get to a place where you can replace that income, depending on what income you
get. And we're not even talking about benefits yet.
No, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't come until later.
Yep. You might not have any benefits for at least the first 5 years of your business because you just can't afford it. You'll be, what is it, robbing Peter to pay Paul, robbing Paul to pay Mary for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And so then think about the other scenario, which is you don't quit your full-time job. You do this as a side hustle and you try to build it up. But guess what? You're going to burn a candle at both ends because like it takes a lot of effort and energy to actually start up a business. Imagine doing that on top of your full-time job responsibilities, right? So it's not a pretty sight on either way. There's a lot of dedication. There's a lot of commitment that needs to be involved and some sacrifice of time for sure in the beginning and maybe for a bit of time. So let's talk about lack of control. Touched on that already. Yeah. So gee, what could go wrong? When you
just imagine that you have now become the single parent of at least 17 children. And every one of them are...
And do they all do exactly what you want them to do when you want them to do it and how you want them to do it? No, they do not. No.
So you have to imagine that there's going to be issues of some sort, big or small, every single day, and that you might not have control over it. But I do say that if it's possible for you to have an idea of what kind of issues you may come across and have a response to it prior to you having that issue, you're better prepared than most.
Yes. And that's the thing you can do is you can just be prepared, but just also be prepared that you're going to be surprised from something from left field.
Oh, yeah.
Always happens. What you never thought could happen will probably happen. You're like, really? How did this even happen? It just does.
I still go through it 12 years later.
Yeah. So if you're somebody who really needs control over everything that you do, and that's okay. Some people, you know, first of all, that's how you sometimes thrive in a job you have because you're so good at controlling like all the factors around you. But I feel like the playing field is so much bigger when you're running your own business that if you're somebody who has a tendency where you feel like you need to have control of everything, dude, entrepreneurship is going to drive you crazy.
Absolutely. And you're going to drive everybody else crazy too. You will
fail. Your anxiety is going to go through the roof. It's just the way it is. You actually have to be, what was it? Not calm. Yeah. Well, I guess calm among, all this, you know, explosions and fires around you. Like you just have to be able to be like, hey, I'm cool.
Yeah. Like you're a grown up. I'm a grown up. Yeah. I trust that you know how to fix this because I trust that I hired you for the right reason. Yeah.
Like, yes, this sucks, but we'll figure it out.
We're going to figure it out.
Keep going. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yep. Okay. So the other thing is work-life imbalance. So we did an episode a little while back about work-life balance, whether it's a real thing or not.
Yeah.
And I brought up work-life integration. And I think we may have concluded that work-life balance is really not a thing when you're like in business for yourself. Like, yes, you kind of like even like integration, like it's just, it's hard because the balance part is hard.
Yeah. Right? But you also have to know, you have to really know yourself because like for me, I'm pretty OCD. And so things have to be in boxes for me, which means that my day has to be in a box. Like I can't, I literally will implode if I do like home stuff in the middle of a work day or at any point that's not, or that's before 4 p.m.
Yes.
It completely implodes me because I'm very much a box person.
Yeah.
9 a.m. to 2 p.m. is when I do just work and nothing but work. And then between 2 and 4 is when I will allow home stuff to creep in simply because that's, you know, I got kids. And through these years, that was when a kid would either, you know, be coming home from school or need something or whatever it was. And then 4 o'clock, I shut off. That's where work stuff does not exist anymore. Unless, of course, somebody texts me because they need a code for something.
But how long did it take you to figure out that balance?
It didn't take me long because that's how I've lived my life.
Oh, so you've always done that.
I've always been a box person, which is why when I had a child, I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this.
Yeah, because that kid fits in a box.
Yeah, so she fit in a box. So I had to fit her in a box, but she taught me.
Sometimes, she probably crawls out of the box.
Yeah, she crawled out of the box sometimes. Yeah. And I had to learn how to be more integrative. I had to learn how to be more integrative. But when I started the company.
You can make up any word you want on this show.
Totally. It's a word. I said it is. But anyway, so like I tried putting her in a box. I had, and that was when my husband was like, I think you need something new to do. Because I was like, okay, from, you know, you wake up at 8 a.m. And if you don't wake up at 8 a.m., I'm waking you up at 8 a.m. And then at 9 a.m., we're going to music and whatever, reading. And then 10 p.m. to whatever. Like I literally had her scheduled out. And the poor girl would fall asleep at dinner nearly every night because I had her so scheduled. But it was the only way I could get my brain from, keep my anxiety down mm-hmm. and everything. It's just how I dealt with anxiety. But then I ended up having to do something else, some other ways. This is my personal journey. Not the same for everybody. I say do what fits your, know your personality, know your person. Know what your shortcomings are, know what your weaknesses are, what your strengths are. Because if you don't know these things or you don't admit them to yourself, like I admit this to myself, I know that I can be very compartmentalized. And I have to allow some of these compartments to overlap occasionally.
It's a superpower in some situations for sure.
And yeah. But sometimes it's a weakness as well. Yeah, because
it depends what the situation
because
is.
I don't, I can't
cross. Yeah,
yeah
you
I have
can't
a,
mix the two. Like it
yeah, so
issue.
I had to learn how to yeah. mix the two in order yeah. to be a more successful and more consistently successful business owner.
Yeah, I was a little bit less disciplined than you. So it took me a while to figure out. Not so much the balance part, but it wasn't a time that I had a problem with. I think time-wise discipline coming from a career, like it was already easy enough to figure out the time discipline because, you know, it was like well into my career. So having being a manager and managing people, like you just figured out the time part, right? It was the energy part that always got me, like mm-hmm. not to like be tired
yeah,
and having enough sleep and not being tired in the middle of the afternoon or at night because I'm so exhausted from the entire day, figuring out how to manage all that, which I feel like goes into the whole work life and balance, right? Because life isn't life if you're tired,
right?
Like it's just not life, right? Same thing if you don't have enough time or you don't have enough energy. Mm-hmm. And so to be quite honest, being a new entrepreneur, like knowing yourself, sometimes that takes time, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. you don't know yourself before you go in and you kind of struggle through this imbalance for some time, which can be really unnerving and yeah. really, really anxiety inducing. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on for some time until you figure out how to cap it and you figure mm-hmm. out how to handle it. So that's probably a pretty common thing. The other thing we're going to talk about is limited skill sets, because guess what? You don't know everything about business when you go in, no matter how much you think you do.
No.
There is a lot for you to learn, especially yep. if you're a new entrepreneur. So not going to speak for you, sorry, because I was thinking like you were in the finance and accounting kind of part, but I came from finance and accounting. So for me, that part was easy. What was not easy? Sales, marketing, business development, client onboarding, processes, funny enough. Was it ideal client, target market? Yeah, all of that. Pricing. Packaging, business model, you know, just that
all
stuff, right? Like all of that, like had to be learned. So I have yet to meet anybody who started the first business and actually knew enough about everything to be, not to mention HR and legal.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
But it did help me to be friends with you. And to have other friends
yes,
who did know those things mm-hmm. and were also business owners. Yeah. So we became each other's strengths and helped each other's weaknesses
yes.
in a lot of ways. Because I remember coming to you about pricing. Like, I don't know how well I'm pricing myself. I don't know.
Yeah, we're all like that. We're like, yeah, no idea.
I don't know. Is it too much? Is it too little? You know, so it's good to have somebody that you can yeah. but recognize. Again, recognize
recognizing.
This.
Yes. But just know that. For a lot of people, and I think you touched on this too, right? Especially with what we're talking about right now is, you know, running a business and owning a business holds a mirror up to yourself, right? And things
for
you
sure.
are not good at will so shine when you're trying to do this yourself. And so that's also just something that a lot of people can struggle with. Like I struggled for some time admitting that I wasn't good at certain things that I thought should just come naturally to me. And it didn't. And I fell in my place and I took a couple years to figure that lesson out. And that was time and money that was wasted.
Yep.
employment challenges I would like to talk about, which goes into HR.
Yep.
So your people, hiring people is a great way to actually help you delegate and actually grow your business. I know I hired people. Greatest source of like happiness and joy and so much fulfillment into providing employment for them. also the biggest pain in my butt sometimes. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh, right? Only you can hear sometimes the dialogue I had in my head while I'm sitting there listening to somebody talk, right? No disrespect to them. I mean, I get it, and I'm trying to be empathetic, but I had to learn so much patience. So much patience. That's the one thing I always say that having employees taught me is it taught me to be much more patient with my thoughts and also more thoughtful with my words. HR probably taught me that too. But I mean, seriously, there was a lot of lessons to be learned there. And I'm glad I've learned it. And I am, again, very grateful for the fact that I got to work with amazing people agree to work for me. Because sometimes I'm kind of like, why would anybody agree to work for me? And then I'm like, oh, thank God you're here.
Yeah, yeah.
But then at the same time, hiring employees and trying to build a business in that fashion could be also just a huge source of anxiety and problems.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but again, it takes you back to know yourself. You might not
know thyself.
Yes, know thyself. Because you might not know how, you might not be hiring the right people because of something that's within you. Maybe you are a microcontroller. Maybe you are a macro controller. Maybe there are things mm-hmm. about employment that you still don't understand, mm-hmm. which is why you keep hiring the wrong people.
Mm-hmm. Hiring the wrong people. Yeah, I spent a year hiring the wrong people. It was great. Plenty of stories. One day, maybe we would need stronger drinks than coffee for me to go through all those nights. More the nights I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, oh my gosh. But yes. Yeah. It's that's a skill set to be learned too. But I mean, honestly, if you go into business and you've always envisioned yourself having a business with people, you got to understand the reality of that behind it. It's not like you just interview and they come in, they're happy and cheery and they do everything you want to do exactly how you want it. That doesn't happen unless you know how to make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start to find new challenges. Before I knew the 5 people that worked for me, but now I got 20, now I got 30, yeah. or I got 50, and I don't know the names of all these people mm-hmm. anymore.
That's also another level. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, once you get to that point, that's a different level. I think a lot of people struggle with hiring their first employee and trying to get that right and perfect, which, okay.
Yeah, and the 50th.
Yeah.
Because then again, you've reached a new level where you don't know the names of all of these people.
And there's levels. It's how your business evolves. There's level to that. There's levels to, managing people at different mm-hmm. levels as your business gets bigger. These are all challenges that goes on forever.
Yeah.
As long as you're in business. I think, I don't remember who said this, but it's so true, is that as you're in business longer, the number of problems you have do not decrease. The number of problems you have actually is directly correlated with how long you've been in business.
More money, more problems.
But what changes is you just get better at handling them, right? And I think that's the thing. That's the misnomer I feel like sometimes people give off, because they do interviews and they make it seem like it's so effortless and easy, but they don't talk about the 10 years in between they had to learn to be the problem solving ninja. You know what I mean?
It's like figure skating. Just because you see somebody doing figure skating and you're like, wow, they make it look so easy. Yes, because they've been training all their lives to be a figure skater. I cannot figure skate.
Yeah.
I feel like I probably could figure skate until I get on the ice and I fall multiple times. And then I'm like, well, maybe this isn't so easy.
But the thing is, you never know. You don't really know you can't do it, because you sound amazing in your mind, until you actually do it, right? And that's the thing, is we're not trying to prevent you from falling, because everybody needs to fall. Everybody needs to, learn. Mm-hmm. But we are trying to cush, put knee pads on you so you don't fall as hard.
Right.
How's that? All right, a couple last thing too. Okay, so starting a business, why you shouldn't, and sometimes you don't realize how challenging it is to actually make a business out of what you're trying to do.
Yes.
Right? Competition is stiff. There's a lot of saturation in the market. You may not know how to niche correctly. It is incredibly challenging to start. And I will tell you, I think every small business starts like this, is you get the, how would you call it? People who are early adopters to what you're trying to do. So you'll get one or two clients. You're super excited. You're trying to fill that client and stuff like that. But then you probably go through a dry spell where you don't have any clients mm-hmm. who are interested in what you're doing. And you know, that stuff is hard, especially if you're not making income and this is your sole source of revenue and income for yourself, right? So there's a lot of ups and downs, especially to your revenue in the beginning. A lot of it to do with competition because other companies have been around for a really, really long time. And you're just coming new to the game saying, hey, I have this amazing, great idea. And then nobody cares.
Or you have a great, like, revolutionary idea. And now a whole bunch of other people, like, you broke the seal, but a whole bunch of other people came up from behind and are like, I appreciate you breaking the seal, but I've made it a lot better product than
that happens all the time too. So you may do something great and then you have a whole bunch of people that just saturated your market and then you have to figure out how you're going to pivot and grow. So it's again, not a very, it's a linear growth. Am I trying to say like just words are a challenge today. No, horizontal would just be that way. Linear, whatever. Anyways, you get, so for those watching us on YouTube, you can see what I'm doing with my hands. I realized once listening to us on the podcast platforms, no idea what we're doing. Anyway, so it's not just a steady uphill, like growth direction, diagonal growth, whatever. Okay, give up.
All right.
Anyways, you get the idea, though. It's not always that. It's usually a bit jagged. It's up and down until you get there. And then last but not least, stress. Welcome. Welcome to the land of high stress. High stress levels.
Although I will say, though, that words escape me. You can counter the stress. You can counter the stress if you are prepared in some way, shape, or form.
I agree. And this is going to be a good leeway in because you're going to talk about some more of this. And then we're actually going to go into kind of ways to counteract a lot of this. Because again, our whole point isn't to discourage you from doing things, but we also want to kind of reveal what it really is like so you're aware enough to know and be prepared for it. So again, you fall on knee pads, not just on your knee.
Yeah.
Yes. But you do agree with me, high stress level. Ish. No, maybe. No. Ooh, okay. Well, I don't know what to say.
No.
No, okay.
And yes. No, and yes. Okay. I think the things that I'm going to talk about will answer my question answer your question because all of the things that I'm going to mention are the things that I did before I started my company. So,
and this is why she's the smarter one out of the two of us, because I didn't probably do half of that crap. And I probably should have now that I look back on it. But I will tell you, though, I feel like maybe we can say that the population is divided 50-50, where there are people who are like you who are very smart about getting prepared. And then there are people who are like me who tend to jump in. Now, I still jump into stuff now. I'm just a little bit more prepared and a little more calculating about it.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people who just start not realizing, and they get easily overwhelmed by everything that it takes.
I agree with that.
Leads to high stress.
Yes.
But there is stuff you can do about it. You just want to be careful that you don't let your physical and mental health deteriorate too much before you figure out how to deal with the stress. But just know stress comes with it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Okay. On to you.
All right. So in my field, I do deal with a lot of hot messes, and sometimes I help them.
It's such a nice way of putting it.
I mean, they are. They're like total hot messes. And I'm like, I don't know how.
But you love them, though. That's why. You had such a big heart. You were like, I'm going to help you straighten out your hot mess. And I'm like,
Sometimes I feel like Dr. Phil, but it's like, whatever. Or Dr. what's his name? Andrew, the one that that does the rehab. I feel like sometimes I'm the rehab person. I think his name is Dr. Andrew.
I don't know.
He was on MTV for a while.
I never watched him.
You know,
didn't have MTV growing up. Still don't watch MTV.
I mean,
sorry,
MTV either. But...
sorry,
dang.
I don't know how this is possible. Being I have like every streaming channel there is, streaming like service there is.
I think his name was Dr. Andrew or something like that. But that's who I feel like sometimes. Like,
feel free to leave a comment and let us know who the heck we're talking about because I have no idea what she's saying. But rehab doctor, okay?
The rehab doctor because he like helps them go through rehab and know themselves a little bit better. And then sometimes they relapse, and he's like, "I'm sorry, I can't help you anymore." He just recently, like, I feel like he was Britney's.
Britney Spears?
Britney Spears, yeah.
Well, he must have fired her after the second time around.
Probably.
I don't know what happened. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, well, like them, sometimes they help them. And But most times we do come to an impasse. We'll go our separate ways. But the thing that I always walk away with is that not every business owner should own a business. I mean, that was the precipice to this podcast. It is the biggest elephant in every room. So how do we tread lightly here and not squash the hand that feeds us, i.e. me?
Your clients are probably listening going, is it me? Actually, I will tell you though, all my best clients have always been the ones that would sit in a room and be like, we're definitely your worst client, aren't we? Like, we got to be the most disorganized. We're like the worst one ever. And I'm like, well, the fact that you're admitting that, you're not the worst one ever.
Is it me? Am I the drama?
So yes. The good thing, if you're asking yourself that while you're listening to Savannah, because you're one of her clients,
you are.
It's not drama. You. Oh, okay. Sorry. But she loves you anyways, so. And for the people who are listening, this is why you should tune in on Spotify or YouTube, because you are missing the very classic
facial expressions.
That Savannah has. And apparently I make a lot of facial expressions. I just don't notice half of them.
Yeah.
But you've got it in hand.
I know. I have always been told that my face tells more than my mouth does.
So don't ever play poker.
Because I don't play poker because my face tells so much about how I really feel about things. I will say that I know that if you're thinking about starting a business and if you've yet to come across mine or Tiffany's table, then obviously this is the podcast for you. So she mentioned quite a few things that you need to think about. And while you think about that, I have more for you to chew on. Consider how much experience or skills you have in marketing, finance. I mean, you kind of touched on this, but you got to think about like, how well do you know these skills, marketing, finance, operations, leadership, sales? However, how much of it can you outsource? And how well do you trust yourself to outsource, maybe it's not necessarily even hiring a person to work for you, like an employee. It could be an outsourced service. Are you okay with that? And if you are okay with it, are you okay with giving up the control of that? Because that's really what it is that, you know.
Two things. Yes. Not only control, which is true, right? Because you can't, well, actually, I feel like the control it's probably a little bit more when you outsource, but you also need to let go of control even if you hire somebody.
Oh,
just
for
in
sure.
General, like nobody likes a micromanager, and I know nobody wants to be one, but dude, there's something about being an entrepreneur and being a small business owner. Somehow you become one if you're not careful. But then two, the other thing is, are you willing to invest time in the level of communication that's needed to make that relationship actually work?
Yeah, and not everyone possesses that natural ability. Not everyone wants to be a Jack or Jill of all trades. That's perfectly valid. However, you do need to be okay with somebody else taking the helm or taking the wheel or however you want to look at it. But know that owning a business, no matter how disconnected you may want to be, as in you're like just a silent partner or a welcomed partner or whatever your association is, because we have to take those people into consideration too. Mm-hmm. It's not that maybe you're going into business for yourself or you're doing this by yourself. Maybe you've got a partner in this and maybe your partner is like totally awesome at this and you are totally not awesome at this. You have to take into consideration that it is going to tie you down, as you mentioned. It's going to limit your personal time and freedom, your holidays, your weekends, your leisurely activity. These things may need to take a backseat to your business. You may want to have more candid conversations with your partner or whomever else it is that's within your business or has a vested interest in your business, like people who you've hired, like you say your CPA or your bookkeeper, or maybe you've hired an attorney or whomever it is that you've hired. Maybe even you're like a real estate agent if you're looking for a brick and mortar. I mean, these are people that are invested in your business, and they're invested in you. You've got to be flexible, and a lack of flexibility, it can be a challenge. In the end, owning a business is also often accompanied by a roller coaster of emotions. It's not just stress; it's also the exhilarating highs of success, the crushing lows of failure and rejection. The emotional toll can be significant. It really is. And by the way, I can also speak to this by personal experience. It doesn't care if you're sick. It doesn't care if you've got COVID or long COVID. It doesn't care that you literally can't put your head above the level of your pillow. These things are still going on. Business is still happening and emotional things are still happening. So your resilience or desire to, not everyone has the emotional resilience or the desire to constantly navigate these ups and downs. So you got to ask yourself, are you?
All right. Before you go on.
Yes.
Scooting in so we can fit your hair in a frame.
Sure.
Come on. There you go. Get a little closer. There you go. Okay. See, now you fluffed it up. So you have to scoot in more.
Yeah. Well. I know. I always said, like, if you and your hair don't fit in the same frame, are you?
Well, it's just that I have so much, like, white space right here because my hair doesn't. Sorry, I'm going to cut this out. Don't worry.
Nah,
or maybe I won't. And that is the reason why you should tune in to see our video, because.
Exactly. Because then you can see how big my hair is.
And how flat mine is.
And the funny thing is I put a lot of product in my hair because I woke up and I was like,
by the way, the professional podcasters out there in the world who for some reason are stumbled over this and is watching this is probably like, wow, you guys do not know how to figure this out. And it's right. We are amateur. I don't care.
Okay. I don't care. I get paid to know the things I know. This is not one of those things. Okay.
So excuse us while we try to figure out how this looks and stuff like that. Yeah. But anyways, going back to the very important content because we actually do have good stuff.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's say you answered no big, I can do that. Yeah, totally. I am ready for this. To all of the things that were mentioned. Now, how do you move forward from here? Well, let's ponder the points before embarking on the journey of starting a business. And if you can, please write these down and see how you can answer these questions or points. And if you're not able to, let's say you're driving or you're walking or whatever it is, please take a listen again, because these are very important things that you should take into consideration when you are deciding on whether or not you should go into business with a person or not. So what's your personal passion? Starting and running a business requires a deep commitment and dedication to ensure that you have the genuine enthusiasm for this venture.
Yeah, and that's important too, because going back to, you know, one of the points I made earlier is the fact that you have to prepare that financially you may be unstable, right? Financially, it might take you a while before you start earning that consistent revenue. If you're all you're doing is going into this for just money, like there is no passion behind it, dude, you're going to burn, like you're going to fume out after, for, because it's hard when you're not actually seeing the income. That's the only thing you're doing it for. But if you're going into this with a passion, like, you know, I created something or I want to do something, I want to make some kind of impact, like that's going to hold you through until you get to the point of being able to generate that revenue you're looking for. So I just, you know, it would make things a little bit easier, a little bit less, I was going to say less roller coaster-ish, but yeah, no. That's just make things, you'll just get through it.
Yeah. So I don't know. Should I like mention with each of these points what it is that I did, or should I wait until the end?
You know, if we were on a live episode, which let us know if you ever want us to do a live episode, I would say we could ask the audience.
Yeah, that is true.
So I'm the only audience. Yes, please.
Okay.
I always like examples. Then people can, you know, see.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe you can connect with this.
Yes.
So when I started my company, I at that time had decided I had already spent many years in sales. I had already done bookkeeping. I'm a writer. That's what I am. And my core is a writer. Also, I had decided that I did not want to be in music anymore. The music industry had made me feel like I had been bled dry. And I was a little disappointed with what I had to give up of myself in the music industry. You can still Google me, though. Anyway, in any case, I literally sat at my dining table and I thought, okay, music has been the only thing that has been definitive of me for as long as I can remember. I have been a singer. I did this. Now what? Who am I? Okay. Who am I? What do I love to do? And I really did reach back into the coffers of my brain to go back as far as elementary school. What was the thing that brought me the most joy? Because that is when you are the most unfiltered, right? What brought me the most joy was helping people. And then I thought, okay, I wrote it down, helping people. Okay, what does helping people mean? What was it about helping people specifically? Well, I would connect people who I knew could be good friends. I started writing the descriptions of all of these things. Okay, well, what does that mean in business? That's how I came up with the idea of my company. It didn't exist at that time, and I don't know that it exists now. I don't really come across a whole lot of competition. Yeah, holistically,
I would say, yeah, you're probably a little more unique because you've combined certain elements that a lot of companies do solely and mm-hmm. focus on only. Mm-hmm. So you're combining.
Yeah.
So I would say it's fairly unique. Yeah.
And to be honest, I've been asked multiple times, why wouldn't you just focus on one thing? Well, because one thing doesn't make me happy. These things make me happy. And if I plan on being in business for a long time, I got to do all of these things.
What makes you happy? Yeah.
So that was my personal passion. Then conduct thorough market research to understand the demand, competition, and potential customers for your product or service. Evaluate the market size, growth potential, and any barriers to entry. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of, and of course, internet had been around for a while at that point.
But it's not like it is now.
No, for sure not.
Like, and there was no ChatGPT to ask. No. So yes.
There was still a lot of things that you had to do at that time. To really, really understand whether or not there was a want for this. So here's what I did. I had moved here from Michigan in 2008. And one of the things that I found very quickly was that the McDonald's was not a drive-thru. The Dunkin' Donuts was not a drive-thru where I lived. And I was like, this is weird because like literally everything is a drive-thru in Michigan. I used to go to the convenience store through the drive-thru, I would get my kids depending on the time of day, either a hot chocolate or a swirly ice cream cone, get my bread, my milk, my eggs through the drive-thru. That doesn't exist here.
Never gotten bread, milk, and eggs through a drive-thru.
Right.
Wow.
I also recognized that real estate was extremely expensive. I can't believe how expensive it was to buy a house here. And on top of it, I don't remember. So I asked somebody, I was like, why are these things not drive-thrus? And they were like, oh, because real estate is so expensive that McDonald's can really only afford to be in the strip mall. And that's like it. Or they would be like former banks or, you know, whatever it is. Like you don't often see a specific space. And I'm like, well, that's bizarre. Okay. And then the next thing that tipped me off was that so many people from on my street work from home, which was, again, a very new thing, but also very bizarre. And a couple of mom friends that I had made were like, yeah, my husband's really depressed because the only way he could keep his job, because this was during the recession, mm-hmm. during like the big recession. The only way my husband could keep his job is if he fired his whole team, including.
Which one was this? 08 or 09?
In 08.
Okay. Okay. I just didn't know. Just for those who don't know the area we're talking about D.C.
area. Yeah. The Northern Virginia, yeah. Maryland, D.C.
Yeah,
area.
D.C. area.
But in Michigan, that was also what had happened, but we experienced it in 06, 07, 08 because of the car industry.
Yeah, we're always insulated here, so we get it.
Yeah, years, so the bankruptcies years, and whatever.
Later, yeah.
Yeah, so people were like, oh yeah, my husband fire his whole staff in order to keep his job, but now he's working twice as much because he has to do his own admin. Or my husband or my wife can only go into work 3 times a week as opposed to 5 times a week because the company can't afford to keep the lights on for the whole week. Mm-hmm. Like these were real things that were happening. And I was like, interesting. So then who's doing the books for these people? Who's doing the admin for these people? Social media is a new thing. Well, who's doing the online marketing for these people? So that was the kind of thing that I did. I conducted market research. And then I went to a few networking events. And I was like, they would say, oh, what do you do? And I'd say, I do these things. Yeah, like, do you like it? And I'm like, oh, that is so cool. Let me have a card of yours. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't have any cards made yet. I did this between January and March, where I went to a bunch of networking events, and I would say that this is what I do. Yeah. Back office support, mm-hmm. and I would say, "Oh, I do back office support. Oh, let me have your card. I would love to, you know."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, sorry, I didn't bring any cards with me. I didn't have any cards made because I wanted to know, was there going to be a demand for what I did?" And there was a huge demand for what I was going to do. So I knew that this was potentially a surefire thing. So after that, I created a detailed business plan outlining your vision, mission, target market, value proposition, marketing strategies, financial projections, and operational plans. A well-structured business plan serves as a roadmap for your company's future.
See what I mean? She was well prepared. I think the other half of the population was like me. I didn't write down a business plan for sure. So, I mean, I did the same research you did, and I kind of went about it almost the same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, countless networking events, trying to figure out which idea hit and which didn't. But did I sit down and write a business plan about my SWOT analysis and my, what was it, exit plan and financial projections? And no.
Well, I will.
But I did do pricing research. That was fun. I just called some competitors.
I did too.
Call competitors, you know, pretending to be an interested party just to see what they were actually pricing out. Yeah, that was hilarious.
I also took two courses at the local community college, one for intercommunication and the other for public speaking. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before, it wasn't because I don't know how to talk to people, because obviously I've been on stages all over the place. The problem was making sure that I spoke like a corporate person, because I worked.
It's a real thing.
You know, like I worked in a jewelry store in Detroit. It's a different level of vernacular than it is.
And especially around here.
Yeah. And especially around here. Yeah. Like I felt so stupid compared to everyone else around me, because everyone else had three or four different degrees and like all these other.
And we are a little judgy around here in the sense that we don't speak with the same tone of mannerism.
Yeah.
Like people dismiss you. Right. Because here. What school, like in the beginning, and just accolades and stuff go a long way.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's a reason why there's a lot of people here with a lot of initials behind their names and what school they went to and what, you know, what board they sit on. The stuff matters around here. So, yeah, I can see.
And how was I going to convince them that I was better at this than they were? So I had to learn how to speak in their language. So that was really, really huge. I will say that my business plan was more focused on how we could afford to pay the bills, because my husband was going to be carrying us financially. And then I got pregnant with our third kid in May. I started the company in January. I got pregnant in May. So like, how the heck were we going to do this?
Yeah.
And my husband made some serious sacrifices in order for me to continue on with this company that I can't believe he believed in me as much as he did, but of course he did. He loves me. So, but anyway, so that was what I created my business.
You're lucky enough to have dual income to support you.
Yeah.
That helps when the other partner is willing to. I did not have dual income, so I had to go figure it out on my own, but I just, you know, I
had to figure out
ramen for a while.
Yeah, but it's still the same thing. I created my business plan based on what I could afford.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to create a budget for what we could afford and when I needed to make certain amounts of money. So he and I sat down, like, this is how much our baseline amount is in order to survive, is how much we need to make a month. So that was what I was basing my.
And that's also something that, like, you know, again, against that financial uncertainty, that's something that can be done, which is just having clarity on your own finance and how much you need to live and how much runway you have giving yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you know, if you do what I did, which is quit your job and go do this full time, that becomes more important than ever. Mm-hmm. My budgeting is probably a lot more simplified compared to yours, because you did have kids and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I just simply didn't have like somebody else that was willing to be the income of the family. I was on my own. And so, but I just sit there and kind of figure out my runway. Like, you know, this is my expenses. This is how much I can carry for how long before I absolutely have to make revenue. And then what can I spend on every single month? Just some kind of budget. Which is close to zero, but let's just be honest though. But that really helps with the uncertainty, the financial uncertainty, because at least you're more aware of what you can do.
Mm-hmm. And to speak on that a little bit further. So you want to evaluate your financial situation, determine the resources that are going to be required to start and sustain your business. So for example, if you're going to need a loan, or if you're going to have to dip into your savings account, if you need investors or maybe grants, depending on what it is that you're planning on going into. I did get a loan from my mom and paid her back pretty quickly. So, hey, you know, got to do what you got to do. I did have to borrow a couple of times in order for there to be cash flow for my, when I started hiring people. They had to get paid. Even if I didn't get paid, they had to get paid on time. So there were a couple of times when I had to go back to my mom and be like, hey, can you just float me for a month? Mm-hmm. And I'll pay you back as soon as I get paid. So, you know, these things happened, and I was thankfully very, it was very easy for me to pay her back. I always pay her back within a month or two. But it was just so that she could help float me. But I knew that it was necessary in the beginning because I knew that I needed to hire X amount of people, even though the hired people's costs were here, but my income was like here, maybe more like here. I knew this was eventually going to happen. It had to, because I had things in the, I had.
So you invested before.
I invested
in it. You actually realized the income.
Yes. Yeah. So next, understand the legal and regulatory requirements specific to your industry and location. It includes licenses, permits, taxes, employment regulations.
And get that insurance.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know why that's the one thing that business owners feel like is not necessary. Like, no, get the darn insurance.
Do that first, please.
Get your business insurance in line. God. Like, it's worth the money always, and especially if you're going to be in a line of work like we are, because we're doing professional services. Like, you know,
there's a level of liability.
There's a level of liability. So you also have to get liability insurance, errors and omission insurance and stuff like that. Like, even if you don't, obviously you don't intend to make a mistake, but still, like, don't let that one thing drag down this huge commitment you're about to make in your business. So get the insurance.
Yes. If there's an intellectual property that you may have, or an intellectual thing that you may have, get the intellectual property protection, and any other legal obligations you may have. I say that's the first thing you should do.
If you can afford it.
Yeah, if you can afford it.
Let's admit it. It's a little expensive.
Or, you know what? Hopefully you know somebody. Hopefully you know somebody and they can help you out. I mean, lean on your village as much as you can.
Yeah.
I certainly did. I leaned on my village, and you were part of my village. So I leaned on my village a lot because, because, you know, I would like to think that you have a circle of people, friends, family, colleagues that want to see you be successful. So lean on them when you have certain questions that you maybe can't afford to pay somebody to ask.
Yeah. And don't have too much ego to not do it. I had too much ego. I didn't do it. And I think it slowed the growth. I didn't want to ask the stupid questions out loud to somebody else, even though I had plenty of stupid questions. And they were not really that stupid, because to be quite honest, you can't be good at everything. We said that right in the beginning. Like, there's going to be a whole bunch of skill sets you're not going to have going into this. And the best way you can counteract that is surround yourself with people who already do have the skill set to either hire or to be able to get advice from.
Yes.
And that's just part of the game. So if you find yourself, if you're one of those people who are not willing to ask for help, like you just kind of have a resistance to it, like I did, like you do get over that.
Is that,
get over it. You're going to get over it. Not if you want to succeed here, right? Just get over it. It's, look, you're in the same boat. Everybody is in the same boat as you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure. And if they're not in the same boat, they were in the same boat. So you have to tell yourself that too. So next, decide on the most suitable legal structure for your company, such as sole proprietorship, partnership, LLC.
Yes. And corporate, please.
Yeah. So each of these have their own implications in terms of liability, taxes, ownership, governance.
And it's lowering the risk too, because you're taking a high risk when you're going into business for yourself, right? I mean, it's not just a high risk just on your own financials or anything like that. It's that too. But on top of that, yes, there's legal risk to it too. And one of the easiest things you can do against that legal risk is incorporate and then treat your business like a business, not like a personal piggy bank.
Yes.
Yes. So that's a definitely, you know, must do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
And if you don't want to do that, maybe you should think about doing something else in life besides starting your own business.
This do not use it as your bank, please.
We got to move on. We have to save that for it. I can see that coming. I can see the steam coming out of your head. We're gonna save that for another episode.
Drives me bonkers bananas. But anyway, okay. So going back again to targeting defining who your target audience is. Understand what their needs are, their preferences, their behaviors. Identify how your product or your service is going to solve the problems or fulfill a desire, and tailor your marketing efforts accordingly. I feel like I kind of already touched upon this. I recognized that there was a problem, and I created, if there was a problem, I'll solve it. And so I did. And not only did I solve it, but I solved it like in a really awesome way. And then I realized also, so to speak to that, I also realized that as my company grew and I was entering my 10th year, my 11th year, 12th year, I did need to pivot to keep up with demand, because as my company aged, technology got better and kind of phased some of the things that we could do mm-hmm. out. Okay, so now how do I become a value to people? That's what keeps you in business for a longer period of time than that whole three year, five year that, you know.
So pivoting is a good point, right? Because again, let's go back to what we were saying is if you are somebody who likes to be in control of everything, you'll quickly realize that in business, there's a lot that you are not in control of. And the best thing you can do is pivot.
Yes.
When something comes up, when something happens, when things evolve, you evolve with it. And that's kind of how you kind of counteract that. It's not like you gain more control.
Yeah.
You go with the flow.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Next, determine what your unique selling proposition or competitive advantage is that sets your business apart from competitors. It could be innovative features, superior quality, lower costs, exceptional customer service, or any other factor that gives you an edge in the market. Because look, we did bookkeeping. We still do bookkeeping. So what set my company apart from anybody else who was doing bookkeeping, right? Well, I would introduce my clients to one another. That was a higher value, I think. I also gave a lot of free advice, which in and of itself was a huge value. And there were some other things that I also did before I pivoted. And then when I pivoted, it was like, I was able to expand all of the value adds for my clients. And it really made our company so valuable that everybody, not everybody, I wish everybody, but you know, like everybody wanted to be a part of.
And that's just going to say that, look, if you're going to get into this game of business ownership or entrepreneurship, is you have to put in the work to figure out where your competitive edges.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to find. Like anybody could argue that bookkeeping and accounting is a very saturated like market.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on, you probably can find us an accountant within like 5 mile radius of where you are because there's just so many of them everywhere, mm-hmm. right? So then you have to do more digging. You got to figure out, it's a little bit harder. Like, what do you do? What is your competitive edge? And you got to keep drilling at it until you find it. And that competitive edge better also be revenue generating enough to sustain your business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to find. But that's something you have to persist at and do. And that's part of being a small business owner.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I usually go back to the example of Lush, you know, bath bombs. Like anybody can make a bath bomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why is Lush like the premier place to get a bath bomb from? Because they make such unique bath bombs that have a heavenly scent. And sometimes they have little goodies inside. It's like a Cracker Jack box. Like why was Cracker Jack or what was it? Bazooka gum.
Oh yeah.
You know, like,
okay, now you're dating us.
I know.
Let's move on.
But it's the little things. It's the little things. And they filled a desire in people that they didn't even know they had. Okay. So next, assess the skills and expertise that you possess and identify any gaps that need to be filled. Determine if you need to hire employees, partners, or consultants to complement your abilities and support your business operations effectively. As Tiffany mentioned, you're not going to be good at everything. I know that I'm pretty good at sales. There's a couple of other things that I'm not so great at. So I hired people for that. And that's what you should do too. You got to let go of the control of being in control of all of those things and know what your weaknesses are and fill that weakness.
And that's the thing too. Most likely you're going to hire, whether you're going to outsource, whether you're going to insource, which basically means you're going to hire somebody,
mm-hmm.
Like as a W-2 versus like a 1099, you're going to hire. So if you're going to go in business, be prepared that you have to go down this road of learning how to hire, right?
Yep.
And how to know who to hire, know what to hire for, and be able to keep an ongoing relationship and create expectations and all this stuff for a long collaborative and yet fruitful relationship with anybody you hire, whether it's in-house or outsource. So, you know, again, if that's something that you feel like you're not good at, like you want to be in control of everything and keep it all to yourself and do it yourself, yes, you can, but you're probably just not going to be a very big shop. If you want to go into business and work with other people, then just know that, again, that is just one of the, like, if you don't like people, obviously don't go into business because
You're going to deal with people like, no matter what.
You're going to have to deal with it. So if you don't like them, that is one reason for you to not go into business.
Yep. Okay. So then consider the scalability and growth potential of your business. Evaluate whether the market has enough room for expansion and if your business model can adapt to increased demand and new opportunities. So for example, if you are a cookie company and all you make are cookies, And everybody else can make cookies. Anybody can make cookies. But what makes your cookie special? And now, how can you expand on your cookie company? Identify potential risks and challenges that may arise during the course of your business. Oh, man, did I have this one mastered. Develop strategies to mitigate these risks, such as having contingency plans, insurance coverage, or diversifying revenue streams. I spent so much time determining all of the ways that I could go to prison. That's how I live my life. What are the things that I can do to keep out of jail? And then I created the problems in my mind and then the solution. I did say that I lived in Detroit for a long time.
Wow. Okay.
So I got to determine where I am the mouse in the maze. Where are all of the exits here? But again, that goes back to my OCD. That goes back to who I am as a person. Like when I enter, when I get on an airplane, I count how many seats there are between me and the exit. It's what I do. Don't judge me.
No, but I feel like that's like you're making me anxious and I'm not even sitting on a plane with you.
It's how I deal with my own anxiety because I do have like a higher level of anxiety. I always need to have an exit strategy. Like even when I would sleep, it's funny. I never slept with my door closed. Even as a little child, keep that door open. I still to this day keep the door open because if somebody were to come into my room, I need to be able to get out.
So you bring up a good point though, right? Like the part of the awareness and then also you have ways to handle it. Yeah. And I think, again, for our listeners out there, it's not about, you'll never be able to actually control what's going to happen, but you can prepare and kind of hedge the risk of things that could go wrong, right? Yeah. So in a way that's like, you're not actually, you still don't actually have to control, but you can lower your anxiety by having, you know, quote unquote, an exit plan. So I don't know if I did it quite so systematic as you did it though, but I did always think about, you know, what is plan B, C, and D if plan A doesn't go well, right? And some of that is, like you said, diversifying your customer list, right? I mean, I kind of did that because I was trying to sell a business and that's the one thing like owners, buyers look at. But at the same time, that's also just a great thing to do to diversify where your income is coming in. Because if your largest client that represents 80% of your income goes away, you don't want to be left holding a bag there, right? Yeah. And it's the same thing too. I mean, I thought about what could go wrong if I hired employees. Well, an employee could steal our idea, steal the process. Okay, so then I designed our team in a certain way so that that isn't possible. Like all of the knowledge base and all of the how-tos doesn't sit with one person. Then, you know, what else could go wrong there? Well, you're always going to need a manager in your business because obviously you're not going to manage everybody. Well, what if that manager decides to like take off and take all their knowledge with it? Well, what we do now? Oh, so now we start implementing the need to document everything. Right. So that you can hedge your risk and try to minimize the risk. Not that it's ever going to go away.
Right.
So there's things you can do about it. And that's the thing here is that if you don't want to go the extra effort to really sit there and think about all the possibilities of how to actually hedge your risk. Again, entrepreneurship may not be for you.
Right.
Because there is a lot of risk that comes with it.
Yeah.
And you just learn how to
mitigate.
Thank you. Mitigate and deal with it. This is why you have a co-host.
Reflect on your personal, family, and life commitments and how starting a business will impact your work-life balance. We're back to the work-life balance again. But you do need to consider how you're going to be impacted. What potential sacrifices and commitments are you going to have to make? And see if it aligns with your lifestyle. Does it align with your lifestyle? If it does, then go for it. If it doesn't, then maybe this isn't the best thing for you. Like if you like to spend a lot of time with friends and family on the weekends, maybe don't be a wedding planner.
There's that.
You know? So, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like you need to see, it's okay. You know that you're going to have to make commitments. You know that you're going to lose your time, but you also need to know, is it going to work with your desired lifestyle? For me, I knew that I was going to put a whole lot into my company and I was going to lose a lot of things, but I also gained a lot of things. I saw it more as what I was gaining. By working from home, I gained the opportunity to be home for my kids whenever that was necessary. Like all three of my children, my daughter, since, I mean, she doesn't even remember a time when I wasn't there. So, I mean, granted, it did kind of stink when they needed me for something or, oh, mom, look at this. And I'm like, I got a call. Like, summer times kind of do suck because I'm still working while they're just, you know, piddling away, trying to figure out who they're going to hang out with. But it is, I felt like there was more positive than there was negative, which is why I went into the type of business I did.
Well, I think regardless if you're an owner, I mean, it's important regardless if you're an owner or not. I just think it impacts your business a lot more, the mental health and like your mental health of the owner, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, until your business gets to be a certain size and a certain stability, the business is only as good as the owner. So if you're not, you know, mentally healthy, meaning that you don't have the work-life balance, you don't have the work life that you thought you would, if you haven't created it, then you're going to run into a whole host of like just pain and suffering, right? Mm-hmm. Somewhere along the way. But just know that like what a lot of people do is they run into that, realize, oh, this doesn't work. And then they pivot and try something else. Mm-hmm. And they pivot and try something else. They pivot and try something else until they figure out the work-life balance, integration, whatever you want to call it, that works for them.
Right.
So, but it takes several tries sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't always happen on the first try. So again, one of those things where you're not willing to go through those trials, then maybe you should second think whether or not going into the business is for you.
Yeah. Like, I mean, when my little one was very little, when he was a baby, I was working more nights and weekends just because, you know, with a baby, you had to be there more often. And then as he got older and my kids got older, and now I'm at a point where, you know, my middle son is going off to college, so I'm only going to have one kid in the house. So I just work during the time that he's in school. And then I'm not working after that. And I've got people who do work after that, and they can text me anytime. So it's created a much more relaxed environment for me. Because I committed to that relaxed time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in saying that, you do need to consider who your support network is. As I said before, you need a village. If you have a village for raising kids, then you need a village for raising a business. You really, really do. Surround yourself with people who will tell you the truth, but also be supportive to you. And to be honest, like I had a lot of friends who helped me out with my little one, because even though my other two were in school, I still had this little one that I had to figure out. So, you know, they helped me out considerably. They were the true MVPs. And my daughter helped out a lot because she was old enough to, and it was a way for her to earn income by babysitting. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do. No matter what it is, no matter what your situation is. But in the end, you have to also consider what your exit strategy may be. Do you think you need, so contemplate whether this is a business that you want to sell soon or that you want to be in business with. Like this was definitely something that it was one of the first things I thought of. What kind of company am I trying to create here? One that I'm going to, you know, be a part of until the day I die? Or am I creating something that I'm just going to spin and make profitable and sell? I wanted to do this forever if I can, or, you know, retire from and have a key person for. I knew that that was what I was creating from the moment I started contemplating this. So you've got to do that too, because that will change the way that you see your business. Mm-hmm. Either this is a business that you are going to be a part of for, or is going to be a part of your life for a long time, or this is something that you have to really focus on making as profitable as possible within the next 5 to 10 years. In the end, entrepreneurship is complex. It's a multifaceted journey. Careful consideration of all of these factors are going to help entrepreneurs make informed decisions and increase their chances of success. Now, in saying that, initially, we weren't going to have a point-counterpoint, but we determined that there's something we disagree on.
We actually disagree. Can you believe it?
I know.
Wow.
So I think that a business owner, a truly successful business owner, is born.
And I think they can be made, meaning that you can learn it along the way and make it. So would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. I think that you either have this innate ability to run a business, and I think that that innate ability is your leadership energy. Either you have it or you don't. And it's okay if you don't. Some people watched George Washington and some people were George Washington. So I don't feel like you can be made to be that way. You have to have it internally.
So I think like persistence and grit and all those words, I think that, yeah, maybe you have to have it. But I feel like for some people, you can rise to the situation, as in the situation teaches you to learn to be persistent and to be gritty in order to get through everything you need to get through to be a business owner. I think if you don't have it to begin with, if it's not innate with you, it's a lot harder, right? And I think that a lot of people go through some hard trials and tribulations until they figure it out. But I still do think that the situation can make the person. See, this is why we agree to disagree. And I think maybe some of that is because
I think the person makes the situation.
I think some of that is also, it's also from personal experience, right? I think between you and I think you are you feel, and actually you tell me how you feel, but I guess from how I feel is that I don't feel like I was born to be an entrepreneur. Like I think there were so many things I didn't know and was so dumb about and just didn't understand and couldn't make myself understand it until starting my own business and then meeting a lot of really hard issues that I had to go figure out and then push myself through to do it, right? I just didn't.
Oh, I didn't either.
Oh, okay.
I mean, no, I didn't either, but I still was scrappy.
But I learned to be scrappy.
Oh, nice.
That's what I feel like. I learned to be, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I assume you can learn to be, I learned to be scrappy by the situation, right? I was bootstrapping. I didn't have a long runway because I quit my job before I knew how to do this, right? So, haha. But I felt like that situation forced me to be clever because I didn't have money to spend on anything. I had to go figure it out and, you know, do things that didn't require money, but get me to the same place. And no. I don't think I've ever been put. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I learned it because I got stuck in a situation, not because I knew how to. I would have felt a lot better if I knew how to.
Nah, I've watched enough episodes of Intervention to know that three siblings can have the same childhood, and one of them is an addict, and then one of them becomes a very successful person, and then the other one is like, I just want to live in Alaska and be left alone. So, you know, I kind of feel like these things exist within you, and either you rise to the occasion, almost it almost unlocks itself. Maybe you didn't know that you had it inside of you, but I feel like you were born with it. Mm. Either you're born with it or you're not. You know, I've always been scrappy, but life forced me to be scrappy, right? Like I had to create my own. I had to create my own solutions. Mm-hmm. However, I know enough to know that anyone who experienced a fifth of what I did in my childhood would have been an addict or dead by now. So, you know, there was definitely something that existed in me that forged forward.
Mm-hmm.
That if that,
well, you're saying that it's already there.
It's already there.
So yeah. And so, right. So my kind of reason, let's take it this way. So I think my viewpoint is everybody kind of has an equal starting point of what's there. Right. But whether or not they have the experience to bring it out or situation, I think that's why I feel like the situation is what brings it out in you.
The thing that you're born with?
Nothing we're born with. I think we're all born with the same thing. It's just a blank slate. We start with whatever that is that we have. And our experiences shape us, brings out certain things, makes us, because of that situation, allows us to adapt because we are. We're human. That's what's so great about humans is we have a growth, like we're able to grow like new ideas and new thoughts and new habits, and new behavior. That's what makes us human.
I agree. Yeah. But there are parts of us that we are born with that we either grow or we die. Not die, like really die. I mean, die, like either that's where that whole fight, flight, or freeze mm-hmm. to me comes from. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has a different response mechanism. Mm-hmm. Either it's a fight or a flight or a freeze. I think the people that fight are born with this ability to fight, that they will always choose fight over anything.
Mm.
The people that are flight will always choose flight.
I felt like babies could talk.
I know. That, you know, my dad used to say that babies are the most intelligent beings in the world until they start talking and they forget everything and they're dumb after that.
Well, no, until they meet like the world. Because then the world shapes them, right? Whatever experience they're born into is what shapes them.
But
that's what
think. I feel like knowing, and I'm not speaking solely about myself. Like I know enough people who will always freeze. mm-hmm. or who will always fly mm-hmm. and who will always fight, you know? So, and there are some people that will both fight and flight, like flight.
I do believe that there's a natural inclination to do certain things, but I've always been in the mindset is like, if somebody else can do it, there is no reason why I can't learn to do what they did, right? I think that sometimes it, like, some people have a natural, like, it makes it, it's easier for them, but doesn't mean that it can't be learned to be done. Although I, you know, could argue the fact that if something is easy to somebody, it might be a disadvantage because they have no idea how they got there. So if they lost it, it's a little harder for them to find their way back.
Maybe. But I do believe that you're born that way.
Well, you guys let us know what you think.
Well, we move on to the raw
truth.
Yeah,
so as we move on, but you guys let us know what you think. How are we going to phrase the...
You think that you're born?
Do you think entrepreneurs are born or made?
Or made. So, in any case, let's get to the raw truth where we share our own gritty experience with today's topic. We want the listeners to know that success isn't easy, it's not pretty, and it's certainly not a straight line. We hope you will hear our cautionary tales and learn from them.
So I feel like my wild truth I already touched on a little bit.
I feel like we've both been talking about it a little bit.
Yeah. I just think that, I mean, you went through your whole like story of how to start. I'm not gonna do that just because heavens, you know, thank you for staying on for so long.
I don't want to stay on much longer.
But in short, I think, you know, what I touched on, my raw truth is I felt like I was wholly not prepared, not an entrepreneur, like to start at all. And I jumped at it, you know, with eyes closed, both feet, literally cut my own safety net because that sounded like a good idea at the time. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I got thrown in a river and, you know, had to figure out how to sink or swim. So I started swimming because I saw other people swimming. And I'm like, well, they can figure out how to swim. I must be able to figure out how to swim. But that's always been my mindset. But like I said, I think it slows you down. I think it slows you down when you're wholly unaware of what you're getting into, right? Like, I'm not, so it's funny because I've said this type of stuff before. I was like, hey, I like to be prepared. And then some people hear it and they go, you know, kind of mockingly, like, oh, you want to be like, you're a perfectionist. You want to be 100% prepared before you jump. I was like, no, I don't want to be the idiot who like clearly has the opportunity to, you know, get a floaty and then thought, oh, no, I'm not even going to try to look behind me and grab a float. I'm just going to jump in and see if I'm not going to die.
Right.
Right. Like, why would you, like, if it's easy, why would you not do easy preparation? And mm-hmm. I think that's the misnomer that people think that entrepreneurs are risk takers. Like, they're kind of fly by the seat of pants, don't care about anything, throw caution to the wind, just jump in. And honestly, every great entrepreneur I've ever met are the most calculated people in the sense of like they calculate their risk. They'll take the risk, but they just know what risk they're taking, mm-hmm. not the fact that they didn't do any prep work and just decided to jump in. Yeah,
I completely agree.
Yeah, I just think that that's the silliest thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
To really believe that a whole bunch of people are running around making a lot of money because they didn't really think about it. They just did it.
No.
Yeah.
No. And you know what? I took 2 years to beta test what I wanted out of my company. Moving to Virginia was not my idea. I did not want to be here. Mm-hmm. I loved Michigan and I wanted to stay in Michigan. The recession really beat the living crap out of me and my husband because we experienced it in 06 and we experienced it in 08 with everybody else when we moved here. It was horrible, 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 horrible. And between 08 and 10, I was working for people I didn't want to work for. I was doing things I didn't want to do. And I knew that I had it in me, but I just lacked confidence in myself. And I also lacked the knowledge that it wasn't really going to take a whole lot of money for me to start what I was doing. So that was the other problem I had, was that I thought it was going to cost me a lot more to start than it actually did for me, for what I was doing. So in any case, there was a serious thing that happened around Christmas of 2010 that I was like, well, ain't going to get worse than this. So may as well start a company now. I may as well start now because at least I know I won't fall far. I might not be on my butt at the moment, but I'm certainly on my knees. So I beta tested it and I ran my company through my husband and everybody else that I knew that owned businesses that I trusted to talk to about it. I didn't want to embark on a journey that was going to either fizzle or waste my time or any little money that I had to invest in it. And I should say that even though my company started officially in January 1st of 2011, I didn't make it like client facing or like an open service until like March or April, public facing until like March or April. So, you know, I did take a lot of things into consider. All of the things that I mentioned, I took into consideration, as I mentioned before, but it was mostly because I had a lot of liability as far as humans.
Just little humans that were, you know,
that I had to,
that she had to be responsible for though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, okay, so it sounded like you kind of knew a lot of the stuff before you jumped in, right? Like all the stuff we're saying that you, all the reasons of why you shouldn't start a business. It sounds like you've gone through all of them in your head.
So I knew I did all of the things that I mentioned, mm-hmm. but I didn't know that that's what you're supposed to do before you start a business.
No, got it.
Because I grew up very, very sheltered.
Oh, but you grew up in an entrepreneur, like an entrepreneur family, right? So you kind of knew what business life.
Yeah, but women had a place.
Yeah.
You know, women had a place. It was a very sexist way of growing up. However, it was just the way that women were groomed. Women were groomed to become homemakers and parents.
Yeah.
You know, and men were the ones that started the business. You know, it was in the end, if you started a business, you still had to be under your husband. I mean, it was also a different time, right? Like I grew up in the 80s, late 70s. All of the 80s.
Couldn't even open a bank account without one.
I couldn't. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it was a little bit different. And I grew up in extremely, ethnic home. So I always say like, I didn't come off the boat, but I grew up on the docks, you know? So like English was my second language, even though I was born in Virginia, mm-hmm. you know? And then when I left Virginia and I moved to Detroit, the only focus I had was to make money because I was in charge of all the bills, car note, insurance, everything. Like mm-hmm. I was in charge of all of the things at too young of an age. And so, and I worked in sales and, you know, like there was this, all of these different things that happened in my life that didn't actually prepare me to become a business owner. You know, I went into music, like the other people were towing the line for me as opposed mm-hmm. to me being the one towing that line. Mm-hmm. However, when I decided to start a business, it was like I naturally knew how that I should do all of these things. I should prepare in all of these ways because why wouldn't I? Like that, it seems irresponsible to not prepare in all of those ways. And then later on, I found out, oh, that's what you should do. That is the process of things that you should consider before you start a business, which is why I say you're born this way.
I like how she slipped that in there toward the end.
Just saying.
Right. So I did not know any of that and I didn't do half of that. You know, I just didn't know. I had a very much more more high level, vague outlook on mm-hmm. how to actually do this. So I felt like, you know, like I said, I got thrown in and I learned how to swim. Mm-hmm. But I mean, honestly, if I had to go back in time and somebody sat me down and was like, hey, you know what? I'm glad you think about starting a business. Here are the reasons why you shouldn't start a business, right? Here's the reasons that, you know, it's financial uncertainty. It could be overwhelming and maybe high stress. There's a lot that you need to learn. You have to be good at a little bit of everything. And there's a lot of a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And all this stuff, you know, my personality type would have been, this is what I want to do. Now I know that's great. I'm going to go prepare for it, but I'm still going to do it. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, I think there's something about preparing for something. It makes the fall a little more padded.
Right.
Right. So I don't think it would deter me, but yeah, it would have been a little bit less painful the first 5 years. Just saying. I kind of got through by some luck in there. But yeah.
Well, speaking of luck, we're going to move on to famous examples. At least the guy that I'm going to be talking about.
It's about luck.
Yeah. In each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or recognized scale, revealing the dots between the living room startup and the success story on the cover of Forbes. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion.
Yes, I don't know if my guy has ever been on the cover of Forbes, although that'd be pretty funny if he was, and you would recognize him right away. So today I'm talking about Colonel Sanders of KFC. So he has a pretty interesting background, being the fact that, I don't know how many people know this, he didn't really find success, or he didn't really franchise. Well, he basically founded KFC in his 60s. Let's just go there, yeah. Right? So, I mean, clearly that he's gotten through a bit of a few years before then doing other things. And what he did was he met a whole bunch of failure and failed startups and businesses that he tried to do. Mm-hmm. So more exact, what he did was, I thought this was pretty interesting. He had a ferry boat company. So he operated one on the Ohio River, but then that shut down because it didn't work out. Then he went into gas station. So he owned and operated a gas station in Corbin, Kentucky. And while it kind of did okay in the beginning, eventually, unfortunately, the construction of a new highway diverted traffic elsewhere from the gas station. And then the gas station closed down. Yep. Because it couldn't survive. And then after that, he decided to go into the motel and restaurant business, where he opened a small motel and restaurant called Sanders Court and Cafe. But then a fire destroyed it and they had to close down. Anyway, so needless to say, he had a few false starts in there, mm-hmm. which just means luckily he wasn't deterred, because eventually, of course, he went on and he franchised Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now, it took some time and it before he actually started making real money. So I think it took anywhere from like 2 to 3 to 5 years mm-hmm. after he started, right? So early on, he had a lot of rejections. I mean, mind you, again, this is kind of a little bit further back in the day. So, you know, franchising some things like fried chicken, let's just say a lot of people are skeptical, to say the least. And he couldn't find anybody to really invest in his idea. So it took a lot of persistence, a lot of determination for him eventually to find the individuals who were willing to partner with him on and open like KFC franchises.
And didn't he give himself the moniker Colonel Sanders?
I think he did.
I don't think it was a real colonel.
No, he wasn't. But I think it went for the business. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was. He also had a lot of financial difficulties when he first started. He actually had to travel across the U.S. in his car, visiting potential franchisees and promoting his chicken recipe himself. Mm-hmm. Usually half the time, he barely had enough money to cover his own expenses, much less trying to secure funds for our future expansion. But so it wasn't until the mid-50s, after about a decade after he started franchising KFC, did he start making substantial profits. And then finally in 64, which is about 14, 15 years later, at the age of 73, he sold the company to a group of investors for $2 million. He kept a portion of it. So he kept like KFC Canada, and he kept a few other franchisees across the U.S. because he's already kind of promised those, or they've been sold to other people. But the $2 million back in 1964 is the equivalent of $19 million today.
That's a lot of chicken.
So yes, he turned that around. But I would say that his story was probably a pretty good story about somebody who was very persistent, mm-hmm. who really hit a lot of the barriers we had talked about financially, yeah. Even just the business idea, being able to make that viable. Like, he hit all those, mm-hmm. failed multiple times yes. to finally get back up and really hit it big, like, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years probably after he started all his multiple business before he hit that jackpot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in my research, I came across a fantastic article about terrible business owners. There were quite a few very famous ones, some you may have forgotten about. So we're going to add it to the show notes. But my famous example is Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison is known as the greatest inventor in U.S. history, even though he had a host of people inventing things on his behalf in his invention factory, working them an ungodly amount of hours a week and paying them not more than standard wages. And he would also say, well, they should just be happy that they're a part of my, like, they're, I'm going to basically exploit their things. Like, I'm going to make their item famous.
Lovely.
Yeah, I digress. Anyway, Thomas Edison had over 1,000 patents in his lifetime. And in 1887, he formed the Edison Phonograph Company to profit from the phonograph technology that he had created. Edison himself ran the company through most of the years it operated. The sound was recorded on wax cylinders. Edison knew there was a commercial appeal for the device, and so he increased adoption of his products by acquiring and offering more entertainment recordings for his machine. Problem was, the cylinders were difficult to mass produce, and sales were therefore limited. Because history teaches us, as I said, as someone will walk so that another can run, you know, he broke the seal. Columbia designed and sold lighter discs, of which we now know as records. This was a much more superior design and could be mass produced because it was lighter and it solved design flaws Edison was too stubborn to resolve. So instead of responding with a better product, he moved on to dictation, which to him was more profitable and less problematic. By 1916, competitors had surpassed him and music impressions, along with all other kinds of entertainment, overshadowed all things Edison. Around that time, a group of popular artists under the Victor brand did all of their recordings on discs, and Edison lost the market for recording audio that he had created. Although Edison hedged his bets in 1913 by creating his own disc division, he continued to keep forcing his unwanted lesser wax cylinder product, believing it would be the eventual winner in the format wars. He was wrong, and the Edison Company, as it had been renamed, shut down in 1929. So, moving on, there's a saying that goes, put your money where your mouth is. And we're drilling down a bit further to connect what we've discussed at a granular level to tangible sources you can take to get you to that next level.
So, since we are talking about all the reasons of why you shouldn't start a business if you decide to forge ahead, there's a few books and YouTube channels and podcasts I want to recommend for those who are thinking over this more so that you can get yourself better prepared if you decide to go ahead with this. So E-Myth Revisited, again, one of the books I always go back to and I love and also helped me think about a lot of stuff when I started. It's by Michael Gerber. 0 to 1, who's by Peter Thiel. Now, Peter Thiel has made quite a name for himself, and he is in a lot of businesses and also worth Uber billions, actually. But he also, in his book, talk about how to actually create like unique value and how to have like unique strategies in order to actually reach success. 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. It's also a classic. It's an oldie but a goodie. Mm-hmm. Start With Why by Simon Sinek. I think that's also an important one to read, especially if you're just thinking about getting into the game of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And then, again, things that will actually really help you concretely know what to do or things you, you know, strategy-wise need to know. Scaling Up, How a Few Companies Make It and Why the Rest Don't by Vern Harnish.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. Yeah, about that really kind of goes into a lot of strategy.
Yes.
So it's really, really good.
And there's exercises and stuff.
Yeah, it's almost like a workbook more than anything else to work it through. And then, of course, you know, YouTube channels, podcasts, Marie Forleo, great channel. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, right? Yeah. Like she, you know, if you want to, I guess, listen to somebody who has a lot about personal development, entrepreneurship, all that, you know, creating a meaningful business, she's just a great one to listen to. Gary Vee. Talk about somebody who's going to give it to you straight. Not exactly 100% my style all the time, but he is definitely does have a lot of truths in what he says, and he doesn't sugarcoat it, which I completely appreciate. Mm-hmm. I do feel like he is for more of the younger, less experienced crowd.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, the truth is the truth, right?
Yes.
Valuetainment. I don't know if you ever heard of Valuetainment. Patrick Bet David has been around for quite some time with his channel Valuetainment. He's pretty motivated about like teaching entrepreneurship and all things entrepreneurship. He's kind of diversified a little bit. So his other material, maybe not your alley, but I think that his like business material is pretty good. If you ever need a little boost of motivation, Evan Carmichael, he compiles all these like videos basically to help you actually if you just don't feel good and you're just having a tough time and you're going through one of those roller coasters, he's great. And then last but not least, the Business Behind Small Business podcast. What do you know? Had to throw ourselves in there and, you know, throw our hat in the ring for that one just because I do feel like we do genuinely and honestly kind of go through a lot of business behind a small business that aren't widely discussed or said, but is necessary and absolutely essential. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we can help, you know, somebody, anybody, hopefully one or two people, even that, on the journey toward entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I completely agree. And not because it's our podcast, but I mean, that's what we got into this for, was so that we could offer a more granular glimpse of what it is to get. I mean, we say it all the time, right? So, you know, we're trying to help you get to know all of the steps it takes, as opposed to listening to a multimillionaire talk about their successes. They're so far removed from that at that point.
Yeah, that it's a little harder to remember.
It's a little harder to remember what you had to go through to get to that point. And so we're a little closer to that memory. And to be honest, I kind of feel like she touched upon a lot of the things. And plus, we talked about a lot of things that you should be pondering. Definitely take notes. Yeah. Listen to this one again if you need to. Stop and start it as many times as you need, because this is one of those episodes that you really need to do some inner reflection and write these questions down that we asked. Write down the points that we made and answer them on your own before you embark on a business. And frankly, you might already be in business and you might be wondering, should I keep doing this?
Mm.
Ask yourself all of these questions.
Yeah.
And if you can't reply, you know, if you can't come up with a solid answer or at least a positive level answer, then maybe the owning a business is not right for you.
And we didn't get into YouTube until I don't know how many episodes again. It was definitely not at the beginning. It was probably like this year before we got into YouTube, only because, well, you know, we get stuff to do and we try our best to be able to do the recording and get everything edited up. So we've always been a podcast. But now that we have YouTube, I would also say that if you have questions, leave it on YouTube. I mean, we're going to answer it. Any kind of questions you have, anything that you're pondering from what we're saying, anything that's not clear that you want to know more of, like leave us a comment, ask the question. And, you know, we'll reply.
Or even if there is something that we haven't touched upon yet and you want us to do a show on, certainly leave us a comment there about that too, because we try to think of all encompassing things as holistic as we can get it, but there might be something we're missing.
Oh, and we're on LinkedIn now.
Hey.
So you can leave a comment there too.
That's right. Okay. So we are unsure yet what our next episode is going to be on.
Ooh, that is the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have three to choose from and we haven't decided which one it's going to be. So it'll be a surprise. So please join us for our next episode where we will discuss something.
Something good. Something behind the scenes. Yeah. Small business.
Mm-hmm. We didn't really have to, I mean, we're busy ladies, man. Anyway, so we, couldn't decide which one of the things that we're going to discuss, we're going to discuss. So, you know, whatever, it is what it is. But anyways, show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube.
Please like,
please
comment. All that stuff matters.
Follow, subscribe, all of the things.
Yes, please, please, please.
Mm-hmm. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. Until next time, mind the business behind your business, because all great successes start small.